Welcome back to Heritage Radio Network On Tour. We are coming at you from Charlotte, North Carolina today. I'm your host, Katie Mosman-Wadler.
And I am Kat Johnson.
And we are here today with a special guest, Bob Peters. Welcome.
Well, thank you guys so much for coming in. Thank you. It's an honor to be back on the show.
Awesome. Well, we caught up with you at the Charleston Wine and Food Festival, but in case anyone missed that interview, Bob is known around here as Bob the Bartender. He is the creative director of bar operations and head mixologist at the Ritz-Carlton here, and we are sitting in his bar, the Punch Room, where we enjoyed a variety of cocktails last night, all astonishing and wonderful creations that we'll talk more about. But also, we just got to go on a super cool tour of the little scene, kind of upstairs.
That's right, the garden.
Back garden and urban cultivator. So yep. I definitely want to talk to you about that.
Absolutely.
Can you give us the quick overview of what the Punch Room is first,
okay,
and then
absolutely.
We'll talk about the tour?
So we're right now we're sitting in the Punch Room up on the 15th floor of the Ritz-Carlton in downtown Charlotte, and we have like this little tiny cocktail lounge up here, and it is 37 seats, so it's really, really small, and that's all we allow in here at one time. And we actually don't allow standing, which is unusual for Charlotte, but you guys know in bigger cities that's really not that outrageous. So that allows us to give the superior level of service when we don't get accidentally overwhelmed by like a big crowd, which tends to happen in downtown Charlotte after concerts let out or sporting events, what have you. But we wanted to make sure that we ensured an incredible level of service here. So again, we only allow 37 people in at once. And when we reach our capacity of that 37, then the host or the hostess will take your name and your phone number, and you can go wait down in the lobby lounge, which is called Kinship. You can go wait down in Kinship, the lobby lounge of the Ritz-Carlton here, and wait for us to send you a text message. Mm-hmm. And then you have some time to close out your tab down there and then come back up to the 15th floor, and we'll have a seat ready for you.
That's amazing. And you just took over the creative direction for the lobby bar as well, right?
That's correct. So I'll be putting out my first menu down there shortly, hopefully within the next couple of weeks, for the new summer menu down there. So we're going to do some fun, really refreshing cocktails for Kinship down there, as well as the menu up here in the Punch Room. The summer menu will be coming out probably shortly after that one.
Nice. Yeah. So while someone's waiting, they can still enjoy one of your cocktails downstairs.
Yes, right. And I tell, it's funny, people ask that all the time. They're like, oh, wow, so you have to wait to get in? And I'm like, well, if we're full, then yes, but it's not so bad because you're still having cocktails in the lobby lounge of the Ritz-Carlton, and it's not like you're on a street corner in the middle of the winter in Chicago, like outside, like dying, you know.
Yeah.
So it's not so bad, I would like to think, that when you have to wait, you're still getting spoiled pretty well.
Not the worst thing ever.
Not the worst thing ever. I would have to agree with that.
So we'll come back and talk about some of the drinks that we tried last night.
Okay.
And about the Punch Room. But
did you guys have fun?
Oh, my God.
So much fun. Thank you.
It was also, yeah. Midnight was Kat's birthday, so you helped us mark that occasion very splendidly.
Yes.
It's up there, best birthdays.
Oh,
that
good.
Was
good.
So cool to just, like, sit there and witness you making all these amazing drinks, and then the glassware. But, yeah,
we'll talk about that.
Okay.
But first, what did we just see on the roof?
Okay, so it's pretty interesting. I don't know if I mentioned this, but so as I was interviewing for this job a couple years back before the Punch Room opened, I was speaking with the general manager, whose name is David Rothwell. He's a brilliant, brilliant man, and somebody that I'm very, very fond of. He's great. So I was speaking with him, and we were sort of interviewing each other, if you will. And he was talking, and I said, "Hey, I'm sorry to interrupt. I've got this crazy idea. What do you think about putting a garden on the roof?" And he paused for about 3 seconds and looked up and over to his right, and he looked back at me, and he said, "We can do that." I was like, I like this guy. He's amazing. So it took him about that long to figure out that that we could, in fact, do it and do it really well. So we have an organic garden on the roof with a bunch of planter boxes, and there's actually beehives up there too. I've got two beehives and a bunch of herbs. We've got some tomatoes growing up there. There's honeysuckle. There's actually kiwi that I showed you guys earlier. We've got a ton of kiwi that hopefully will come in this year. It takes a little while to fruit. So again, keep your fingers crossed and we'll have kiwi cocktails shooting off the 15th floor. And probably in the lobby, too. So I'm looking forward to the kiwi coming in.
And for our listeners who were not lucky enough to see those kiwi plants, well, I don't want to give it away, but how does a kiwi grow? Can you describe it? Is it a bush? Is it a tree? Is it a shrub?
Kiwi is sort of loosely related to grapes. So think grapevine kind of thing. And so we have some trellises up there, and they basically have woven themselves into the trellis. And they take about a year. Again, they take about a year to fruit. And we planted them last year. And so hopefully this year we'll get some fruits of our labor.
I see what you did there.
Thank you.
And is the kiwi flower edible, and will you plan to use some of those?
I plan to use everything I can. I don't know. I haven't explored too much about all the different uses that I can come up with the kiwi yet, but I've played around with it a little bit sometime in the past, but I'm really looking forward to doing some really crazy stuff with it. I wonder if, I mean, surely you can eat the leaves, but they've got that fuzzy kind of, right. Yeah, you've got that fuzzy thing, but then you can eat kiwi too. So we'll figure it out. It's going to be fun. Like that's part of the fun is like the journey, you know, exploring all these new weird things.
Well, also talk to us a little bit more about the beehives and how those work.
Okay, so the beehives that we have are non-traditional beehives. They're called flow hives, and I have two of them. I'm hopefully you can get. I would love to have a couple more up there, but for right now we have two. And the flow hives were developed by a father-son team, and I believe they're out of Australia, if I'm not mistaken. And they sort of came up with this kind of new technology sort of beehive. And what they did is they produced a man-made honeycomb in there. And so the bees don't have to produce the wax. And what happens is they can just go in there and start filling them with honey. So at a point in the back of the beehive, instead of in order to extract the honey, instead of having to like take the roof off and then take the individual frames out, which is what has the honeycomb in it and the honey, then what you do is you put a crank in the back of the box and you turn the crank, and what that does is it cracks the man-made honeycomb. And so then at that point the honey can roll through the honeycomb and then come out basically on tap at the bottom of the beehive. So you don't have to take the bees out of the hive in order to extract the honey. So they don't go crazy. So you don't need a beehive. You don't need a bee suit, and you don't need like a smoker or anything like that, because they're just chilling in their beehive. It's pretty fascinating.
And normally when you are going to extract honey, you also need to centrifuge the honeycomb to separate the honey out of the comb. Do you have to do any kind of filtration?
No. No, we don't resell this honey, so we like to keep it in its sort of raw status. And it's really incredibly delicious. And because of all the herbs that we have up there, you can taste notes of the basil and the mint really, really prominently inside of the honey, and it is delicious.
So talk about the Charlotte urban agriculture and apiculture scene.
Okay, so this is really something that is really important to us, and one of the great reasons why I love working for the Ritz-Carlton is because they are so incredibly committed to their guests that they have allowed me basically to put an organic garden on the roof with beehives so that your cocktails taste better. I mean, it's outrageous, and I really love that fact that that that's something that we're pushing, you know, to do like this pretty odd stuff. So, you know, there's farm to table sort of movement. This is, we've kind of deemed this like a garden to glass kind of experience, which is, it's really interesting. And like, again, just an odd way of sort of going about doing cocktails, but again, why not? You know, why not? So it's great. The agriculture scene and the urban agriculture scene here in Charlotte is definitely getting larger by the day. There's lots of places now that have their own gardens for herbs and things like that. And the agriculture scene down here in the Southeast is pretty amazing. So you can hop in your car and drive about 10, 15 minutes north of the city, which would probably take us about, I don't know, maybe 20 minutes from here in downtown, and we could be on a farm, you know, and have like and not just a little tiny farm, but like a big farm with all kinds of really amazing, amazing produce coming off the farm every day. So it's really nice, and it's great because the you guys, I'm sure, have talked with some of the other chefs in town who probably mentioned the Piedmont Culinary Guild, which is great because the PCG is something that started a couple years ago, and it's this incredible resource that we have now to connect the farmers with the chefs, which is great because now you don't have to worry about like the middleman sometimes. You know, you can get it right from the chef. So if all of a sudden you realize that, you know, strawberries are in season, then you can sort of go through the PCG and then get in touch with a strawberry farmer. And then they'll be like, yeah, how many do you want? You want 100 pounds? I can bring them to you tomorrow. And you're like, oh, my, yes. Yes, please, please.
As a matter of fact.
I know, right. That's great. So the agriculture down here has gotten, well, has been, and also the urban agriculture has gotten really amazing lately. And I'm really happy to be exploring that in our program here as well.
Mm-hmm. So we had a couple of drinks last night that featured some local produce. I want to talk to you about the buzzed bee. The buzz bunny.
Buzzed bunny.
I got distracted with bees and beekeeping. The buzzed bunny, the drink, and then we have to talk about the glassware.
The glassware, okay. Yes. Well, so first things first, the Buzzed Bunny is one of our brand new cocktails on the spring menu, and that has Cardinal Barrel Rested Gin, which is a local North Carolina gin. It's made in Kings Mountain, North Carolina, which is only about, I don't know, 35 minutes away from where we are right now. And Cardinal is one of my favorite products. I use it all the time. And that is, it's this really incredible gin, and it's aged for a year in an American oak barrel. So it's dark. It looks like a whiskey, but it's actually a gin. It's really cool. So I use some of that as well as some fresh pressed carrot juice, which gives it this really beautiful orange color, of course. And then after that, a little bit of sweet vermouth, Italian sweet vermouth. It's amazing. And then on top, then I put a homemade Saint Germain foam on top, which is cool because the foam has booze in it, so it's kind of like floating a cocktail on top of the cocktail that makes the cocktail taste better, which I think is fun.
Mm-hmm.
And
it's really cool to watch you put the foam in there because there's not much of an opening in that glass.
It's interesting. So I've found these really crazy beautiful this glassware called Ruska out of the Czech Republic, and they do all these amazing beautiful hand blown pieces. And so this glass, and you can see pictures of it. Actually, I guess you can see an easy thing to do would look it up on my Instagram. So that's Bob_Peters. And anyway, so you can they look like poppy blossoms. Like beautiful poppy blossoms, and so with a stem on them, and they have this really narrow opening, so that there's a glass straw that goes down in that, and I think they're really whimsical and fun, and they're just stunning. Like it's something that you haven't really seen before in kind of a glass vessel, and so I thought that it would be fun to put roots and flowers all in the same glass, and it's one of these poppy blossoms. So that's the carrots are the roots, obviously, and then the flowers are the The Saint Germain elderflower liqueur. So it's,
and you've actually got the seeds on there.
Yeah, and then you sprinkle some poppy seeds on top, and it looks beautiful, and it tastes pretty good, and it's fun.
We'll put a photo on the episode page too, so whoever's listening, go check it out. And you have to look at Bob's Instagram because it's just gorgeous. We'll come back for all your social handles at the end, but don't miss it. It's so beautiful.
So glassware is a big part of the cocktails that you make.
Absolutely.
How and why did you fall in love with collecting interesting glassware?
Well, thank you for noticing. Some people, I think, don't understand how important glassware is to cocktails. I think it is incredibly important. It's the same sort of way that chefs are obsessive about their plates sometimes, you know. You want the glass to show off what you're doing, but not exactly to take away from it. So it's this weird balance of like beauty and simplicity that sort of needs to harmonize. And so I love beautiful glassware that typically is simple and elegant. And I think to me, like, that's the most beautiful stuff in the world is like simplicity. You know, to me, that's true elegance. So I just think that it's incredibly important. So I put a lot of energy into it. You know, I will find, like, dig for days and days and days to find glassware, and then I'll find something new, and then I'll latch onto it like a crazy person, and then finally figure out a way to get them in here. And then the fun thing is then you get to sort of dress up the glassware with drinks.
Do you ever see a unique glass and have an idea for a cocktail based on just looking at a glass?
Yeah. So there's a fun story that it's bad. It's good and it's bad. I actually sometimes dream about work, you know. I'm sure you guys can relate to that at some point, but
I think your dreams are probably way more fun.
Well, so this one time I was looking and I found this really cool piece of glassware. This is some years ago. I found this really beautiful sort of vintage-looking small milk bottle. And it looked like something your grandparents probably drank out of while they were in school, you know, sort of the mini milk bottle. And I became obsessed with it. And I was like, okay, I'm going to buy this. And then I thought to myself, well, you don't know what you're going to do with it yet. Why would you buy it? So I said, okay, I'm going to figure out the recipe first. And then as soon as I do that, that will be my reward. We'll be able to get the glass, you know, so... So I thought about it literally for days, and I was like pacing by my computer, looking at it and trying to figure out what I wanted to do. And I also wanted it to be something smart that wasn't just, you know, like if you put a Jack and Coke in a milk bottle, like that just doesn't make a whole lot of sense. You know, like it's still going to look cool because it's a beautiful bottle, but I mean, it would be a whole lot smarter if it actually related somehow to the vessel. So I thought about it, couldn't come up with anything, and then was thinking about it right before I went to bed, finally fell asleep, and then I dreamt about the recipe. People are like, oh, that's awesome. You're dreaming in recipes. That's great. No, it's not great. It's not great at all. I'm still at work when I'm dreaming. I could be flying through the Grand Canyon or like Superman or doing something cool, but... No, I'm still at work.
You're just making
I'm still making drinks, right, in my dreams.
Changing the world.
Can't get it out of my head.
So
I finally came up with this idea, and I woke up and I had the recipe in my head. And so a lot of times the glassware will influence the cocktail. And so, inspiration can kind of come from anywhere. A lot of seasonal stuff. Obviously, a lot of inspiration can come out of your garden or from your local produce or from spirits. But glassware can definitely be an inspiration too.
So we're almost out of time. Okay. But speaking of dreamy cocktails and glassware pairings, I was hoping you could describe what I can only describe as like the terrarium glass with the flowers that we had last night and leave us with that beautiful vision.
Okay, so that is a cocktail that I created for Valentine's Day last year, and that is a cocktail for two. So it is that is created by a glass designer named Martin Jacobson, and he is a Dutch designer but produces his glasses out of the Czech Republic as well. So that actually, it looks like a bubble, kind of like a snow globe. but it has two glass straws that come out of it. And it's this really, he's a genius of a guy. It's and it's all enclosed. So the idea behind it is that it's a picnic glass for your lemonade so that bees can't get into your drink, which is, I think, brilliant. But what I did with it is I put some cardinal gin in there, again, one of my favorite things. And then I used a Middle Eastern apple tea to infuse with a Riesling. And then I put a little tiny bit of simple syrup in there. And then I used some dried hibiscus flowers and then some fresh edible flowers on top of that as well. So the interesting part there is that when the hibiscus flowers rehydrate, then they start to dye the color of, they start to change the color of the cocktail. So little by little, and you guys saw this last night, is the cocktail changed from this sort of pretty yellow color from the color of the Riesling, and it slowly gets like pink, this light pink color. And then by the end of the drink, after, you know, 10 or 15 minutes of sipping on this cocktail for two, then it's like this really dark beet red, you know, through the hibiscus color, and it's beautiful, and the flavor changes subtly too over the course of time, which I think is fun. Mm-hmm. I think it's fun.
It's gorgeous.
Yeah.
And I found over time there were those little coriander flowers, mm-hmm. that, you know, at first they're white with little greenery, mm-hmm. and they started to really visually pop towards the end, yeah. and that kind right. of cilantro flavor really permeated. It was so special.
Yeah, it's fun. It's cool because the color, when the color changes, then the contrast of the drinks and the garnishes change as well. So it's I love things that change. Like, I think I'm sort of fascinated with cocktails that change over time, mm-hmm. especially if it's visual as well.
So where can our listeners find more of you and these drinks? I think they're all very thirsty. Where can they look?
Right. Go ahead. Have a cocktail. So you can find me on Instagram at Bob_Peters. You can also follow us along here at The Punch Room, which is at The Punch Room. If you do Twitter, then I'm at Bob the Bartender, which I think is hilarious. And then Facebook is Bob Peters Craft Cocktails. My website is bobpeters.net. I think that's about it. I mean,
is there
any more social media out there?
I think you about covered it. I didn't hear your Tumblr though.
I don't even know what that is. What is Tumblr?
Pinterest.
I think it's like Reddit.
What is Reddit?
I don't know either. Well, Bob, thank you again so much for the wonderful drinks last night and for the tour and for this interview. I hope we see lots more of you soon. What's next on your agenda?
So we're getting geared up for the Atlanta Wine and Food Festival. Food and Wine Festival, excuse me, mm-hmm. Atlanta Food and Wine. And so that's June 1st is the kickoff date, and so I will be at the opening event and pouring some North Carolina cocktails. And so if you guys are in the area, come on down to Atlanta Food and Wine. It's going to be great.
Cheers.
Cheers.
Thanks, guys.
Thanks for having me.
We will be back to you soon with more. Follow us on iTunes. Look for Heritage Radio Network on tour. We'll see you soon.